and welcome to Learning English, the daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America in Washington. This program is designed to help people like you learn everyday American English. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondents Alice Bryant and Pete Musto will tell us how American college students are challenging free speech. Then you will hear words and their stories. This week, Anna Mateo will tell us about the origin of the word lunatic, as well as about the word fringe. And we will present The Making of a Nation. Now, here are higher education correspondents Alice Bryant and Pete Musto.
For many years, American colleges and universities have let people speak on their campuses, even if many students do not agree with their beliefs. College-aged students often do not agree with conservative political beliefs. But school officials believe that letting speeches by conservatives and others take place on campus can help lead to free and open debate. But recent protests show that beliefs about free speech on college campuses may be changing.
Since February, protests have broken out at colleges across the country, including the University of California, Berkeley, Middlebury College, the Claremont Colleges, and California State University, Los Angeles. Some of the protests turned violent. The protests started because conservative speakers were set to give talks about their beliefs. Some people have criticized the protesters for trying to prevent controversial speakers from being heard. Will Creeley is the senior vice president of legal and public advocacy at the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. He told VOA that those who support free speech are worried about the protests. He says schools should work harder to protect speakers who may have different political beliefs than many students. Last month, a student group at Middlebury College in Vermont invited Charles Murray to speak on the campus. Murray is a political scientist and a fellow with the Conservative American Enterprise Institute. His research has linked race and intelligence.
The Southern Poverty Law Center calls Murray a white nationalist. Hundreds of protesters shouted as Murray tried to speak. Officials moved him to another building, where he spoke with Professor Allison Stanger. His discussion with her was shown online. College spokesman Bill Berger says that as Stanger and Murray left the building, they were physically and violently confronted by a group of protesters who set upon their car, rocking it, pounding on it, jumping on and trying to prevent it from leaving campus. Stanger was taken to a hospital. She left wearing a neck brace. She said during the dispute with protesters, one of them grabbed her hair and pulled her backward. In a message on Facebook, Stenger wrote, "I feared for my life." Earlier this month, students at Claremont McKenna College in California targeted Heather McDonald. She is a researcher at the conservative Manhattan Institute and a well-known critic of the Black Lives Matter movement. Students said they disagreed with a book McDonald published last year called The War on Cops. In it, McDonald wrote that police officers are afraid to do their work because of increased attention from reporters following the police shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, in 2014. Brown, who is black, was killed by a white officer.
A student group invited McDonald to speak on campus, but protesters stopped her from entering the building where she was to speak. She was forced to instead broadcast her speech on the internet. The protesters hit the room's windows and shouted until McDonald later said, "The cops decided that things were getting too chaotic and I should stop speaking." Police officers then had to help McDonald leave the building so she could safely escape the protesters. After her speech, more than 20 students signed a letter to David Oxtoby, one of the school's presidents. They called McDonald a fascist. The letter demanded that the university take action against an independent student newspaper for its reporting on the protests and for its continual perpetuation of hate speech.
Oxtoby had previously condemned the protests and defended McDonald's right to speak on campus. He said the college supports the exercise of free speech and academic freedom. The students said McDonald is a well-known figure and her beliefs have been reported many times by the news media. They said refusing to let her speak did not violate her rights. And they said McDonald being on campus is a form of violence. Creeley says incidents like the ones at Middlebury and Claremont are becoming increasingly common at American colleges. He called the trend deeply troubling. He says the students do not know enough about laws that protect free speech in the United States. He notes that there is no hate speech exception to the First Amendment. There is an unfortunately prevalent problem of students being unaware of the extent of their rights and the rights of their peers, he said.
In 2015, the market research group YouGov asked students about free speech. In the opinion study, 43% of the students questioned said making sure that students have an environment free from discrimination, even if that means placing some limits on what students can say, should be more of a concern for colleges than protecting the absolute right to free speech. Gallup did a similar study in 2016. It found that 52% of students believe their college or university should stop people from speaking on campus who have a history of making hateful comments.
I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Pete Musto.
Now the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. On this program, we talk about common expressions in American English, where they come from, and how to use them. Today, we leave the mainstream, the majority. We go to the edge of society, to the lunatic fringe. Merriam-Webster's online dictionary defines lunatic fringe as members of a political or social group or movement who have the most extreme or foolish ideas. It is the radical part of a group or political party. Two other words that describe people who are part of the lunatic fringe are fanatics and zealots. But now, let's look at the word lunatic. Lunatics are mentally unstable people, or people who behave very foolishly. The root of lunatic is luna, Latin for moon. The old French lunatique means insane. The online etymology dictionary explains that in the late 13th century, people who were mentally unstable were thought to be affected by changes of the moon. Now, the word fringe has several meanings. For example, fringe can be a decorative border. Curtains, pillows, tablecloths, and clothing are all things that can have fringe. This meaning goes back hundreds of years. Fringe can also mean to be on the outer edge of something. For example, the family lived on the fringe of a national park. This is an actual area where their property meets the park. But you can also be on the fringe of something that you can't physically touch. For example, my friend who lives in Los Angeles has worked on the fringe of the entertainment industry for many years. That is the meaning of fringe that is part of today's expression, lunatic fringe. The online etymology dictionary says that in the late 1800s, lunatic fringe described a type of hairstyle for young women. However, word historians give former President Theodore Roosevelt credit for today's meaning of lunatic fringe. In 1913, shortly after a failed attempt to become president again, Roosevelt wrote about an art exhibit of painters. These artists painted in ways no one had seen before. At the time, they were the lunatic fringe of the art world. This paragraph is from Roosevelt's writing titled History as Literature.
In this recent art exhibition, the lunatic fringe was fully in evidence, especially in the rooms devoted to the cubists and the futurists, or near impressionists.
We cannot guarantee that Theodore Roosevelt was the first to borrow this expression from a woman's hair salon and use it in another type of salon, one where important conversations of the day take place. But he does get the credit for making lunatic fringe more mainstream. And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. I'm Ana Mateo.
Thanks, Ana. Now we present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, Steve Ember tells the story of the presidency of George W. Bush. His first term came to be defined by the worst terrorist attack against the United States in the nation's history.
George W. Bush had been in office for less than 8 months when the events of September 11th, 2001 took place.
A plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
Good Lord, this is just a horrific moment.
The day is remembered as 9/11. On that morning, 19 Al-Qaeda terrorists hijacked four large passenger airplanes on the East Coast. The planes were flying to California, so they were heavy with fuel. Each group of hijackers included a trained pilot. American Airlines Flight 11 had just left Boston, Massachusetts, when five hijackers seized control of the plane.
Is that American 11 trying to call?
We have some planes. Just stay quiet and you'll be okay. We're returning to the airport.
American 11, are you trying to call?
Number three in the back. The cockpit's not answering. Somebody's stabbed in business class. And I think there's mace that we can't breathe. I don't know. I think we're getting hijacked.
Nobody move. Everything will be okay. If you try to make any move, you'll endanger yourself and the airplane. Let's stay quiet.
Shortly before 9 o'clock, the hijackers crashed the Boeing 767 into the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City.
A plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center. It happened just a few moments ago.
The World Trade Center, tower number one, is on fire. The whole outside of the building was just a huge explosion.
Five other hijackers seized United Airlines Flight 175, another Boeing 767, also on a flight from Boston.
Hey, can you look out your window right now? Can you see a guy at about 4,000 feet, about 5 East Airport right now? Looks like he's...
Yeah, hi, Sam.
You see a guy, look, is he descending for the building also?
He's descending really quick, too, yeah.
Well, that's...
He's 500 feet now. He just dropped 800 feet in like one sweep.
That's another situation.
Another one just hit the building.
Well, hit it hard. Another one just hit the World Trade.
The whole building just came apart.
They crashed the jet into the South Tower of the World Trade Center a short time after the first plane hit the North Tower.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
That looks like a second plane. We just saw another plane coming in from the side.
You did. That was out of view.
Yes, and that's
you.
The second explosion. You could see the plane come in. So this looks like it is some sort of a concerted effort to attack the World Trade Center that is underway in downtown New York.
The Twin Towers each had 110 floors. They were the tallest buildings in New York and among the tallest in the world. They stood a few streets away from the New York Stock Exchange in the heart of the Wall Street Financial District in Lower Manhattan.
Oh my goodness, there's another one.
The planes exploded in fireballs that sent clouds of smoke pouring from the skyscrapers. Thousands of people were in the buildings. Many workers on the floors below where the planes hit were able to escape. Others on the floors above were trapped. Some apparently felt their only choice was between burning to death and jumping. News cameras showed disturbing images of bodies falling from the towers. The South Tower of the World Trade Center collapsed just before 10 o'clock. After burning for almost an hour, the North Tower came down about 30 minutes later. It had been hit first and had burned for 1 hour and 42 minutes.
The second building that was hit by the plane has just completely collapsed. The entire building has just collapsed as if a demolition team set off, when you see the old demolitions of these old buildings, down on itself, and it is not there anymore.
Investigators later found that the intense fires from the jet fuel burning for as long as they had caused the structures to fail. The ruins of the two buildings quickly became known as Ground Zero. Several other buildings in the World Trade Center complex were damaged or destroyed as a result of the collapse of the Twin Towers. Another group of hijackers took over American Airlines Flight 77, a Boeing 757. The plane had taken off from Washington Dulles International Airport.
Okay, American Airlines is still airborne. He's heading towards Washington. I think we need to scramble Langley right now, and I'm gonna take the fighters from Otis and try to chase this guy down if I can find
Mike Leshefsky has some new information at the Pentagon. I hope you'll stand by and continue to talk with us. Mick?
Katie, I don't want to alarm anybody right now, but it felt just a few moments ago like there was an explosion of some kind here at the Pentagon.
The hijackers crashed the plane into the Pentagon, the Department of Defense headquarters, across the Potomac River from Washington in Arlington, Virginia.
We're on the E-ring of the Pentagon. We have a window that faces out toward the Potomac, toward the Kennedy Center. We haven't been able to see or hear anything after the initial blast. I just stepped out in the hallway. Security guards were herding people out of the building. And I saw just a moment ago as I looked outside, a number of construction workers who have been working here have taken flight. They're running as far away from the building as they can right now.
The plane exploded a hole into one of the five sides of the huge building. And four hijackers seized United Airlines Flight 93, another 757. That plane had taken off from Newark, New Jersey.
United 93, that traffic through is 1 o'clock, 12 miles eastbound, 370.
Negative contact, we're looking at United 93.
People on the flight learned about the terrorist attacks in New York and Washington through phone calls to loved ones.
It looks like you descended there.
So. United 93, verify 350.
United 93, Cleveland.
Go ahead, Frank.
Do you have United 93 south of Chardon?
We hear some funny noises. We're trying to get him.
Do you have him?
No.
Some of the 40 passengers and crew members fought to retake control of the plane from the hijackers.
United 93 was waving his wings as he went past the VFR aircraft. They don't quite know what that means. Rocking his wings.
Air traffic controllers and law enforcement officials struggled to make sense of the events taking place that morning.
United 93, have you got information on that yet?
Yeah, he's down.
He's down?
Yes.
When did he land? Because we have information.
He did not land.
Oh, he's down?
Yes,
down?
Somewhere up northeast of Camp David.
Okay, there is now on that United 93.
Yes.
There is a report of black smoke in the last position I gave you. 15 miles south of Johnstown.
Flight 93 crashed in a field near the small town of Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The intended target for Flight 93 may have been the Capitol, the building where Congress meets. No one could be sure if other airliners were involved in the terrorist operation.
The Federal Aviation Administration has actually gone even further than it did a few minutes ago. It was asking all planes not to take off. Now the FAA has ordered all aircraft currently in the air over the United States to land at the nearest airport.
Air traffic controllers began the complex job of getting all planes across the country and those heading in over the Atlantic onto the ground safely.
So this meant at very early in the morning, as flights were halfway across the Atlantic Ocean to land in the United States, we had already initiated protocols to shut those arrivals off from the oceanic areas, and they had to make tough decisions such as either turn around and go back to Europe or go to alternate destinations, which many of them did in Canada.
Canadian officials assisted. They allowed flights from across the Atlantic to land in eastern Canada, including at airports in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Gander, Newfoundland. Almost 3,000 people died in the 9/11 attacks.
You got it coming in from building number 2 on the 97th floor. People trapped.
19.
We're all around the building. We're completely around the building. We're into the building now. Okay.
Most of the victims worked in the World Trade Center. The victims also included rescuers, among them 343 New York City firefighters. They died trying to save others. Pictures of missing persons began to appear in the city as loved ones waited and worried. 3 days after the attacks, President Bush went to Ground Zero. He spoke to the rescue workers and promised that the attacks would be answered.
I want you all to know, America today is on bended knee in prayer for the people whose lives were lost here, for the workers who work here, for the families who mourn. This nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Each day, thousands of visitors came to see the site and to honor those who died. At the Pentagon, people left flowers and messages of sympathy near the heavily damaged wall. 184 people died in the attack on the Pentagon, including the victims on the plane. It took months to clear the wreckage of the Twin Towers. The attacks in New York changed the distinctive skyline of Lower Manhattan. The Twin Towers, completed in 1973, were gone. The economic effects of 9/11 were felt far beyond America's largest city. The New York Stock Exchange stayed closed until September 17th. When it reopened, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, a measure of leading stocks, fell by what was then its biggest point drop ever in a single day. Among the companies most affected by the attacks were airlines and other businesses that depend on travelers. The nation's skies were empty of commercial flights for 3 days after the hijackings. And when flights returned to normal, many people were too afraid to fly. Thousands of hotel workers and others in the travel industry lost their jobs. The shock and sadness of the 9/11 attacks brought Americans together less than a year after the disputed presidential election. In a show of patriotism, more and more American flags began to appear on homes, cars, and businesses. Small American flag pins were worn by many Americans. The attacks pointed to the work of Osama bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda organization. On September 20th, President Bush went before a joint session of Congress to declare a war on terror.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there. It will not end until every terrorist group of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated.
That's our program for today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.